This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen along with you. Well, foot pain is an extremely common problem, but evaluating and diagnosing it can be daunting because of the wide array of conditions that can cause discomfort. And while the exact prevalence rates in the general population aren't really known, some small studies have suggested rates between 30% and 80%. Well, joining us with more on this subject is Dr. Christopher Neville. He's Associate Professor of Physical Therapy at Upstate's College of Health Professions. Welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, foot and ankle pain, it's quite a common problem, I guess.
It is.
Tell us about it.
There's really a range of things that can cause foot and ankle pain, and then it's amazing how debilitating people can be due to their foot pain.
So, how many in the general population that you've seen or know about, what would you say? Do you think the prevalence is more like 30 or more up to 80%?
Well, you know, one of the things that's also very interesting about foot pain is that people manage it on their own, and probably lots of people have foot pain. And what do most people do that have foot pain? Well, they go get new shoes, or they you know, maybe go see their primary care physician. But really, probably lots of people are managing foot pain, but they're managing it kind of on their own.
Right.
I would say most people that I see, by the time I see them, they really have really bad foot pain that they've had for a long time.
Really? Yeah. I mean, especially with all the ads for Dr. Scholl's and things
of that nature,
I think people often think of it as something that they can provide a home remedy for.
Sure.
So what are some of the potential causes that you think that are out there for both foot and ankle pain?
Well, there's really a range, and it probably depends a lot on age, too. There's lots of kids with foot pain. But then as we get into, you know, young adults and then even older adults, you know, for sure, what do we know of the most common ones? Well, plantar fasciitis is a huge one.
So plantar fasciitis, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Plantar heel pain is a really common source or you know, cause of foot pain. That if you ask the general public, maybe even many people have probably experienced it sometime throughout their life.
What causes that?
So the plantar fascia is a fibrous band that's on the bottom of your foot, and it maintains, you know, we know mechanically it maintains some of the structure of your foot. But, you know, in our culture, we spend a lot of time on our feet. We spend a lot of time walking around, and we put a lot of stress on that structure. So it gets inflamed, or it may start to degenerate, and that's what causes pain.
So that's basically, it's an inflammation of the fascia.
Well, yeah, there's even some new data that says it doesn't quite, it may not be inflammation. It may be sort of a degenerative reparative response.
Mm-hmm. How about things like women wearing high heels? Do you think that contributes a lot to the kind of issue of foot pain? I mean, especially now, these days, I mean, you're looking at heels of 4 inches up.
No,
I can't even imagine it. It's interesting. I break an ankle
myself.
We
look at footwear across our culture. It's pretty amazing. But, you know, again, there's so many so many causes of foot pain. As we look towards the forefoot and toes and bunions and things like that, we probably see the shoe wear and high heels and you know, pointy shoes and things like that is probably a really, you know, more contributing to foot pain in areas like that.
How about athletes? I would think they would be very at risk for foot pain.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, soccer players and things like that are always hard to treat because they like their, you know, to stick their feet in really small shoes.
Yeah, I remember when my boys were playing soccer, the idea was to get a shoe that was two sizes smaller than you would normally wear.
And stretch it out.
I never quite understood that. Fortunately, they didn't suffer long-term injury, but it's a pretty scary thing. So tell us about treatment in general for foot pain. I mean, what is the general sense of treatment?
Yeah, I mean, well, and treatment really ranges. I mean, if we talk across clinical care, I mean, you know, there's we mentioned already off-the-shelf kind of things, and there's lots out there. People, you know, really great shoes, and then also just off-the-shelf kind of orthotics and things like that.
So when you say really great shoes, is there a rule of thumb in terms of, you know, being fitted properly? I mean, these days is not like I remember. Now, I'm getting up there in years, but it used to be you'd go to a shoe store and someone would really fit you with a shoe. Mm-hmm. And these days, you're buying off the internet or you're going into you know, warehouses and you're buying shoes, you know, at Marshall's or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so no one's there to really tell you this is a good fit for you.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point just in that, you know, the data on shoe wear and modifications to shoes we really have struggled to find the exact changes that we can make to shoes that then impact how the mechanics of your foot change. And so a lot of sort of the recommendations on shoe wear have really come back to sort of saying what is comfortable to you. If you go in and you put on a pair of shoes and it really isn't that comfortable, it's probably not the right shoe for you.
So comfort should rule in a sense.
In many cases it may, just because this idea of having shoes that are anti-pronation shoes, or if your foot is too supinated and so you should be in this type of shoe. In many cases, those shoes don't match up to what is going to be comfortable to you anyway.
So really, you will almost have to let comfort be your guide is what I'm hearing.
It has to be one of the factors for sure.
As opposed to style, which often is very uncomfortable.
Yeah, or just fitting into one of these, like if you have a flatter foot or a pronated foot, or someone tells you you have a pronated foot, then you should only wear, you know, certain types of shoes. That may not always be the case.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, and I'm here with Upstate physical therapist Christopher Neville, and we're talking about that common foot the common disorder of foot pain and treatments for it. Now, I understand that you are involved in a study to examine the best conservative treatment for a very common foot disorder, flat feet, which you just alluded to a moment ago. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so flat feet, although in many cases we identify flat feet as a problem, it's really not a problem. It's actually quite normal, and if you look across, you know, the population, lots of people have flatter feet or flat feet, and it never bothers them at all.
I'm one of them.
It's okay. Right?
I always felt so odd about that, though, because so many people I would know growing up had these beautiful arches, and I'd have this very flat foot.
Yeah, but it's really okay. When it's not okay is that there are certain conditions that cause flat feet. So if you're foot, one foot, or both feet collapse, and then you should get that seen. You know, you should be seen to see.
So they become flat. In other words, they don't start out as flat feet, but they somehow flatten, is what you're
saying. Or they get flatter. Mm-hmm. And if you see things like that happening, that those there can be reasons that happens, and you should get it treated sooner rather than later.
And what is the term for that?
Well, one of the conditions that causes an acquired flat foot is posterior tibial tendon dysfunction.
What does that mean?
And what that is it's a degeneration of one of the tendons in your ankle. This tendon we've discovered it has a pretty primary role in kind of the mechanics of how your foot works. So if it starts to degenerate, it changes a lot about the structure of your foot, and then also sort of more globally just in how your whole mechanics work for walking. And things like that.
And I read somewhere that it can happen either from an acute injury, like in a fall, or maybe overuse, but also other risk factors can play a role, like diabetes or obesity or hypertension.
Yeah, we really see that just as sort of the characteristics of people that have this problem typically are, you know, over 40 years of age, more sedentary in their lifestyle, maybe have hypertension, diabetes, things like that. It's usually not an acute injury of any kind. Many times people will come in sort of relating it to, I remember stepping off of a curb or doing something. But really the degenerative process takes a long time. It's been occurring for probably a long time. There may be just one event that you remember.
So what's the goal of your study? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, so this problem has been around for a little while, but it's relatively young in the you know, fields of research. So we have very little data to suggest, you know, what is good care for this problem. Most of it has been in surgery, so there's lots of surgical care for it, and it's very successful for the right person.
But obviously not for all.
That's right, not for everyone. And so what we're trying to do is look at some of the conservative care options. Conservative care has been widely recommended.
Give us an example of when we say conservative care, as opposed to surgery.
Yeah, so that usually includes physical therapy or exercise in some way, but then also orthotics or bracing, and that's been really a pivotal piece in the conservative care arena, is what are the braces, what are the orthotics that you can use, and are they successful?
So is that what your study is attempting to do?
Yeah, this study is really targeting, trying to understand what are the components of the braces, how are they designed, and then do they work?
So what will you be doing exactly?
So what we're looking at is we're looking at four common braces that are used for this problem. and we're evaluating each of those four. And we're evaluating them not specifically for those exact four braces, but these braces represent kind of the different types that are out there. And
I see.
We're looking at the components in them and their design.
So you need people to participate in this study right now?
We do. So people with posterior tibial tendon dysfunction that are seeking care, they can be enrolled in the study, and then they're provided braces.
Yeah, are there other considerations in terms of the people? And they have to be a certain age,
They do have to be over 40, and this is more commonly seen. Most studies have about 80% women in the study, but you don't. It can be either men or women, but you have to be over 40, and that's mostly just to exclude the sort of younger runner population, high school athletes who can get similar kinds of pain, but it's really sort of a different problem.
So you want to control your population.
Yeah, like all research, right? We control it a little bit.
So what will the study participants be asked to do?
So what they're going to be asked to do is come in a few times, and what we're going to do is make, cast and fit for these braces. So we'll make some of these braces and then have them wear them. We'll have you wear each of the braces that we make while you walk in the lab, and that's the part of the study where we're looking to see how these braces work. And then you're going to be randomly assigned one of the braces. You wear one of the braces for 12 weeks, and then at the end, we see how you did.
So basically, you're attempting to, as you said, evaluate the effectiveness of one particular style of brace over another in terms of treatment.
Yeah, part of it is to look at the mechanics of how they work, and then part of it is to look at the effectiveness of them at the end.
Yeah. So how long will this take place? I mean, what period of time?
This is an NIH-funded study over 4 years, and we're in about a year and a half right now, so we're almost halfway.
But you still
need a little ways to go.
You still need more participants.
We sure do.
Well, how do people get involved if they want to?
So it's a clinical trial run through Upstate, and you can call the lab. We have a phone number or an email.
I saw a phone number for the Upstate Motion Analysis Laboratory at 464-9966. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And so then people will also have more information on our website about it. But the point here is that you're looking for people. It's free to them. Mm-hmm. They get an opportunity to get some really good treatment and figure out get a solution to a problem that's much wider.
Yeah,
sounds
for
like.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in. My guest has been Dr. Christopher Neville, Associate Professor of Physical Therapy at Upstate's College of Health Professions. Thanks, Chris. I wish you the best of luck with your study.
Well, thanks for having me.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.